Cast of the Neil Haley Show and Celebrity Interviews, live from the Grotto with Greg Hanna. Greg, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm doing amazing. I'm so excited to talk to our next guest. I mean, here's an amazing man that if you turn on anything, you'll usually see him in it. It's just incredible.
A. Martinez. A, you know, when you think about back to your career and everything, did you think it would get to this level? You know, you keep working as a working actor, but you constantly are doing new things and new opportunities, right?
Yeah, you know, I made a joke one time. I think I was on Regis and Kathy Lee back in the day when it was the two of them. And he said, "So you're always working like crazy, aren't you?" And I go, "Well, I feel like I'm sort of constantly limping along, Regis." And he said, no, that's the wrong answer. You know, you're supposed to say that you're doing great all the time." So in honesty, I felt like I've been steady, but, you know, sort of not too hot for pretty much ever. And now, oddly enough, I'm getting a lot of work. It's kind of shocking, actually, at this point in time. Feels really good.
I'll have to say, one of the things that I know, maybe we'll get right to Longmire in a bit, but Dark Winds, dude, I love that show. I love it.
Me too, man. You know, I've done five things over the years with Zahn McLaren. And one of the first things I think was an HBO show called Grand Avenue. And I was playing the protagonist and he was just getting started. He had like one or two scenes. And, you know, even back then you go, oh, that guy, you know, Robert Taylor on Longmire calls him Fingers because he steals every scene that he's in. But the truth is, he's just an amazing actor. And when I saw that he got that, I was so stoked for him. And then to get to come and play alongside him on it, it's like a dream come true, actually. Yeah,
definitely. And let's talk about how it all started in acting for you. Did you always want to be an actor?
You know, I didn't. I wanted to play baseball. I was fantasizing that the reason the Dodgers came to Los Angeles is because they knew that somehow they needed me on their pitching staff or some crazy thing. I didn't have any idea really what it meant, obviously, to play baseball or play any sports on a serious level. But I wanted to do that, and then I got jumped into to singing. My father started bringing home the auto harp from his elementary school class, and we would sing together, and we started singing a lot. And then I got into a musical in school that this teacher cast me in, The King and I. And next thing you know, it's sort of like, what's this acting thing? And then I got lazy over the last summer between high school and college, and I was going to study political science, and they sent me this list of 11 books you have to read before you start. And I thought, oh man, this is the last summer of freedom. I don't want to read these 11 books. And I had a friend from drama class who was going to the same school, both going to UCLA, and his task over the summer was to write a 500 word story about himself. And I thought, I'm chasing the wrong dog here. So I jumped into it just out of my laziness. And of course, one thing I'd come to understand in going to a drama class was that the girls that you met in drama class were some of the coolest girls you'd ever meet. I mean, they were just more adventuresome than most people. And I thought, I want to be around girls like that. So it was like a combination of sloth and a little bit of youthful lust that got me into chasing acting, I think.
That's awesome. Yeah. So when you started out, and maybe even today, when you're acting, like, who were some of the influences, older actors, younger actors, whatever, that you have in your mind or that you think about that helps shape, you know, your performances?
Well, my father's two favorite actors were Cantinflas, the comedian from Mexico, and John Wayne. So, we saw all the John Wayne movies, and, you know, that obviously seeped in really early. It was astonishing to get to work with him in The Cowboys. You know, my dad thought I was, you know, he was a little bit disappointed that I gave up on, actually trying to get a degree and being a serious student in college. I just started doing all these plays and not going to class, truthfully. And he just, he was really worried for me. He was genuinely thinking I was throwing my life away. And so when I got cast in the Cowboys, then it was like, oh, maybe there's something there. So it was that. And then over the years, you know, I got to work with Zero Mostel, the director of Farhaven, actually. Gary Wheeler just sent me a link to a movie I made with Zero Mostel in like 1972 or three. Oh my goodness, I was bad. I mean, I just, it's astonishing to see some of that early stuff and you go, and they let me do another job after that, you know, it's just amazing. But I learned a lot from Zero. And I, you know, just, you know, got to work with certain people over the years that shined a light. I got to work with Meryl Streep on She-Devil, and she had been my hero, still is my hero. I think she's the best who does it. And so you just, one of the great miracles of it is if you get success on any level, you get to learn from people who are good at it. And that's the best way to learn how to do it. So Meryl Streep, John Wayne, Zero Mostel early on.
Wow. And, you know, when you think about all that, what led you, you had a longer career before Westerns, or I mean, later in your career with soap operas and being soaps.
Yeah,
what kind of got led you in the soap game? Because that's where you're recognized a lot, I'm sure.
Yeah. Honestly, that's a really good question, Neil. I thought my agent at the time, Alex Brewis, was giving up on me when he dangled this in front of me. He first described it as something like Dynasty or Dallas, where you know, those nighttime shows where you're spending 8 days or 7 days to shoot an hour of TV, not a daytime show where you're shooting an hour every single day. And that scared the bejesus out of me. I just thought I had vague memories of watching soap operas where the scene would end and the camera would just stay on the actor's face and the music would swell and they just leave the camera there. And the poor actor would have to like pull all these faces to try to like make it be interesting to look at. I thought, oh man, I don't want any part of that, you know? But my wife, who had Leslie, my wife since 88, actually, she, 82, God, it's bad when you start forgetting when you got married. But she had seen some soaps and had a higher opinion of them. When I got the script for Santa Barbara, I looked at it. And I thought, I don't know how to do this. It's just, it's too sentimental for me to know what to do with it. And she said, well, why don't you rewrite it? So I went to a park about three blocks away, four blocks away from NBC in Burbank. And I sat under a big tree and with a yellow legal pad, and I made up a scene based on the scene that they were asking me to shoot. And so when I went into audition for that, and there was a whole room full of us trying to get that part, and I had a tremendous advantage, which I had seized without asking permission, because I was doing exactly what I felt I could do with and keep my, you know, keep my chops intact. And boy, I tell you, you know, I've told that story to some of the actors because I meet a lot of actors over the years who were trying to get that part, get crews.
Right.
And, you know, when I tell them that what I did, they don't feel good about it. And I think there's a lesson in it, which is, you know, fortune favors the bold. And, you know, to walk in there and say, well, and I said to her, when I got in the casting director, I said, I'm sorry, I just couldn't solve the scene. I couldn't solve it, but I could do this. And I gave her what I had written. And she goes, oh, we could do this. And she stood off camera and did my scene with me. So, you know, I had an unfair advantage. And even though I thought it was scary and impossible, it's in truth, that's really where I learned how to act. When you have to do a show every day, you get your ducks in a row. And it was a matter of realizing how much time and how much energy I was wasting in my life on a daily basis. Because when you have a job like that, you have to stop wasting time and stop wasting energy. Otherwise, you just can't do it. Mm-hmm. So it was a gift beyond. And I was too done to recognize it when it first showed up. But finally, I got to do it.
One take, right? there's a couple of not many takes for some.
Well, you know, it has turned into that now, pretty much. After the OJ trial, the money started to die because the soap started to get canceled. OJ killed the whole model. Even I wanted to watch OJ instead of a soap. And he was on trial, you know, and doing that. That was must see TV. And, you know, but in the day when we did Santa Barbara, it was more like a theater experience. We'd spend the first 3 hours, all the actors with the director working out what we're going to try to do. Then you go out on stage, you spend 3 hours with the cameras working on your stuff. Then you break for lunch. Then you do an entire performance of the show as a dress rehearsal. Then you break for notes around 4 p.m, like you do in the theater, where everybody gets fine tuned. And all day long, you're watching all your colleagues. So you know what everybody's doing. You have a sense of what the show is that you're making that day. And then you go to tape, at say 5 o'clock and you shoot. At the beginning, it took us till midnight to shoot a show. But the thing was this. You realize that they want you to do it as quickly as possible. So if you can't do it and you think they're going to say, and sometimes they say, oh, that was fine. That was fine. You know, we'll fix it in the post. I would just stick my finger in my nose so that I realized they couldn't use that. And it was another kind of not asking for permission, but insisting I had to do it again. So I would take more than one take if I possibly could and usually needed to.
That's yeah. Great. That show ran like 9-10 years, right? That was.
Yeah, I think 9 years, and it was, it was successful all over the world. Roger Corman's old company, New World, that B movie company he had for so many years, they made it. So there was this network in place, and so they sent that show all over the world. You know, every market they'd say, here's Southern California glamour, and it's real cheap. And then they'd get 100 episodes and they'd come back for more. And now it's not so cheap, but they'd hook their audience. And it was a tremendous benefit to all of us in terms of getting to get the kind of TV movies that would show overseas, because you had a show that was popular overseas.
How did you kind of venture back out of soaps so you didn't get typecast?
Yeah, that was part of the thing that's so scary about it. You know, Neil, you think, you know, because you see, I mean, so many actors and a lot of great actors. I mean, I worked with Tony Geary on General Hospital, you know, and he was on that show for what, 40 years? You know, there's people that are celebrating 50 years.
Wow.
And the thing I noticed about Tony was he made his peace. He did a few things outside of it, but he'd made his peace with what he was doing. And he treated every day like the most important day of his career. So I just, you know, you go, well, it's possible to actually do this and keep yourself together. But I just had the good fortune of, while I was doing it, I got to do an episode of L.A. Law, where I played a childhood friend of Jimmy Smith's who got put in the gas chamber. And it was such a revelation, you know, how serious they took it. We went in a few days before we reported, and Jimmy and me and Bill Finkelstein and another of the writers were sitting around improvising. They'd write everything up, send it upstairs, come back with it. We'd improv again. We worked the material before we even started. And when I got there, they gave me, or before, the day before I got there, they sent me an article by, God, I want to say Jean-Paul Sartre, about the last night in the lives of three Turkish prisoners who were going to be executed in the morning. Just food for thought about what people are like when they're about to die. And then they sent me a medical piece on the way cyanide kills you. And one of the great things about that was you think, you know, if you hold your breath long enough, you can keep alive for a few minutes, but it actually comes at you through your skin. So I got to play that in the gas chamber. You know, I'm not going to let you kill me. I'm not going to breathe. And then the guy's holding his breath and slowly realizes, oh my gosh, I'm going to lose this battle without even breathing. And
wow.
It's just, anyway, so I got to do that, and they knew me, and then they offered me a part on L.A. Law, playing another character, actually playing a lawyer. So that, you know, you got, well, I can't believe I got this opportunity, but I'm going to jump on it. And of course, L.A. Law was about to, it had two more seasons, and And, you know, NBC wanted to cancel it, and it had become very expensive. And people were saying, oh, you can't cancel this. It's one of the most highly rated dramas on TV. But waiting in the wings for that Thursday night slot was ER. So NBC came out small like a rose with that. And I got to, you know, jump out of daytime into something with a lot of dignity to it. It was great.
Oh, wow.
Well, hey, you mentioned John Wayne, Fingers. You know, what other actors, like, you're on the set and you're like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm working with who? Who would that be? Yeah.
Well, a couple in the later years, certainly Gary Farmer. You know, I worked with him in Powwow Highway, and he came and did a Longmire. He played the contrary. He did a couple, you know, he just did a couple of scenes in Longmire. He did a scene with Lou Diamond Phillips and Rob Taylor. He was living under a bridge, homeless guy. And he did, in that scene, he was vacillating like Quicksilver between laughing and crying. I mean, the dude is a stone genius. And I think of Rob Taylor and him in the same breath sometimes, because I've been acting in scenes with those two people and, you know, looked away and come back and looked into their eyes. And you see something going on in their eyes that seems like it's connected to their endocrine system. Like they're just so alive as a creature in the moment that it actually, you can feel that the chemistry of their body is changing as they're having these new thoughts about the scene. And you know, it can be breathtaking. I mean, I've almost fell out of a scene in Powwow Highway when I'd been looking away and I looked up at Gary. And there were tears streaming down his face because I had been treated rudely. And Rob Taylor, too, I was telling him, you know, and he never liked Night Horse. And he, you know, he was, you know, politicizing and, you know, going on with this BS and stuff. But I said a phrase that actually made him think, oh, it was about these kids that were being jumped into foster care. It's a true thing where you get a bounty, you get extra, you get double if you can bring an endangered indigenous kid into your foster care home or something. And so it was being abused. People were like kidnapping these kids for the money, the extra bounty. And, you know, Night Horse was trying to say this to Longmire is, you know, like, as usual, you're so full of it. But I said something that made him believe it. And his eyes changed, you know, and I'm like, you know, this far away from the dude, it's like the best seat in the house, you know, and, you know, he's just that good. So those two men, certainly, you know, they're just astonishing and lucky to work with them.
All right, let's talk Farhaven now. Thank you, INSP, for setting up this interview. Tell us about, you know, Farhaven and your character.
Well, I play the town blacksmith. I like to think of him as he's working in technology. You know, he's keeping the transportation system in good shape. And we were going to shoot that in 2020, in March of 2020. In fact, I had booked my plane flight for that Friday, for Friday the 14th of March. And on the 11th was the day that Tom Hanks got sick with COVID and his wife, Rita Wilson, and the NBA canceled their season. And suddenly, you know, and my wife and my son were playing in this rock and roll band in town that was doing a lot of business at a club out in the valley. And suddenly nobody showed up that night. And it was like, oh. And so they canceled, you know, Farhaven. They put it up till August, but of course August was no better. So Gary Wheeler said, you know, we're going to do this. We'll do it. And boy, true to his word, you know, what, 3 years later, we did it. And the great thing was that you know, I think all of us, I mean, I know I was able to do it better. I think in those 3 years, you know, there was so much good came out of COVID for actors. You know, they complain about it. We generally complain about it, but not me. When you suddenly, you can't go to auditions anymore, you have to send your audition in from home. So now you actually can do the scene you want to do. You're not driving away from the audition on the freeway going, well, why didn't I, if only I could have thought of, you know, you're actually alone doing it. And so, you know, you get to do what you want for better or worse. And that made me a better actor. So I'm glad I got to do Farhaven after all this has happened. And of course, then they brought in Bailey Chase to play the lead, and he's a brother to me. And it was just effortless to find the connection and be emotionally connected to his good fortune when he got good fortune in the thing. I just loved it so much. I thought that everybody brought their A game. One of the great gifts that Gary Wheeler brings beyond his writing and his producing chops is that as a director, the set is relaxed. You know, when there's a problem, he deals with it in a way that doesn't make you feel threatened or make you kind of feel like you're doing something wrong. I think early on, I realized when I was thinking about him that one of the first nights I'd done worked with him, I thought to myself, what's different? And what's different is you're hearing laughter, and a lot of the laughter is his voice. And so you're just relaxed. You know, the dude has an amazing gift for seeing the bright side of things, as he puts it. He's all about hope, and you know, he's about hope. And as a director, it informs the way he treats people. It's just a beautiful thing. Great show. Wow. People love it. People love it.
All right. Definitely check it out. INSP. Greg, go with your final question you ask every celebrity.
Yeah. I'm excited to ask you. Hey, it's been a real pleasure to meet you and have a chance to chat. But let me ask you this. Hey, tell me, what do you feel is the most important thing in life you've ever learned?
That the idea that we're separate, that people and animals and plants and all that, that we're separate, is an illusion. The truth is that the force of life is a continuum, and we're all part of it. And this idea that we're, you know, either need to be dominant or protect ourselves from some aspect of it is an illusion. It's all of life is part of the same stuff.
That's great. Thank you.
All right. Where is the best place we can connect with you? Are you on social media, AIM or A, and people can check you out?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram and Facebook as A Bone Martinez, A-B-O-N-E Martinez. It's my dad's nickname for me, and it was the only way I could get on Facebook. They wouldn't take A as a name, so I became A Facebook. And
any other projects you're promoting right now?
Well, Avatar The Last Airbender is on Netflix, and I have a great part in that, and it's the number one show in the world right now. And I'll tell you what, watching it is a profoundly emotional experience. They found a bunch of young actors to play the leads. These young actors are just astonishingly brave. I mean, they're learning how to do it as they go, some of them, but they're just their hearts are strong, and it's a wonderful show to watch. Avatar, The Last Airbender, Netflix.
Okay. Another thing for me to watch, Greg. I got Longmire as I was talking to Bailey about. Everyone that I interviewed, then I end up watching their projects. And that keeps me always going with specific things. And I really was missing during the whole strike. Oh, man. COVID didn't keep me from interviewing celebrities, but this did. It was all I could interview athletes. So I'm so glad that we're getting things back together, more auditions, more opportunity, and hopefully, you know, the business continues to thrive. So I appreciate A for stopping by.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you, Greg.
All right. Great to meet you. That was the special simulcast of the Neil Haley Show and Celebrity Interviews, live from the Grotto. Greg Hanna, guys, take